This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. We have with us David Adams of the Nevada County Green Party. Mr. Adams, thank you for being with us.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us. Can you perhaps begin by talking a little bit about the Green Party for those people who are not familiar with it?
Well, the Green Party is, of course, a third party and one of a number of third parties. It was begun, it depends where you count as its starting date, but in the late 80s, early 90s, in California, 1992 was the date it became legal, and has elected quite a number of candidates since then, mostly to local or county-level offices, but with one large exception recently, as you know, was the election of Audie Bach to the California State Assembly at the last special election.
Which is the main reason why I wanted to get a hold of you and to get a hold of somebody from the Nevada County Green Party, because as many people now know, Audie Bach has changed her political affiliation, moving to what is being referred to as decline to state. After hearing Ms. Bach speak on an interview on KVMR, I mean, I wasn't surprised, but I'm trying to get a sense of what the thoughts are regarding, you know, people who are in the Green Party. I mean, here somebody gets elected to state office as a Green, and in less than a year, it appears all of a sudden she's changing her mind or something. I'm not quite sure what's going on, and I was hoping to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, I think we're still trying to sort it out a little bit ourselves. It seems to be, on the face of it, an election strategy decision, which you can debate, you know, pro and con from the point of view of electoral strategy. But it also raises a question which some of us, I guess, have had all along, is in terms of her own priorities, whether her main priority is winning as a candidate or building the Green Party in California. And I think this decision makes it a little clearer which is the most important to her in terms of those two alternatives. It has led to, I mean, there's been quite a lot of discussion about this, everything from, you know, supporting her position to expressions of disappointment and anger on different Green Party members around the state. But I think one valuable thing that's come out of this is it led to a discussion within the party on the whole relationship between candidates and the party, and maybe new models for that, which then the current sort of corporate major party one.
Talk, if you will, about what you mean by that.
One of the questions, I guess, is when a candidate is elected, usually they have a lot of assistance from the party in canvassing neighborhoods and making calls and getting out signs and literature and publicity and so forth. And the typical model is that once the elected official enters office, they sort of begin to betray their constituents in one way or another and start marketing themselves to big money, and usually in industry or commerce. And I'm hesitant to say that's what's happening here. I don't think it is. But the real question is, should there be some kind of ongoing relationship between an individual who's elected and the party that help them get elected or that they're supposedly representing in office? And within the Green Party itself, the question has taken forms like, do we, for instance, run, as being still a very young party, do we run campaigns to win offices, to make, you know, better laws that will just kind of make the current system a little more warm and fuzzy? Or are we looking for more fundamental kind of social change? Are we trying to educate people primarily? Is that the real purpose of participating in the electoral process? Or something along that line, anyway. That's one way the debate has gone. Another way would be let's say cults of personality versus cults of committee. In other words, does everything revolve around the individual person who's elected and they make all the decisions and call all the shots, or do we have some kind of a party committee that runs them? I don't think either of those extremes is quite right. But the question is, what kind of relationship should it be that's the most healthy? And there's a lot of, you can go on and on about that. But.
Well, I would imagine there's been a tremendous amount of debate about what this means for the Green Party at this present time, and then also for strategizing for future elections as well. We're talking with David Adams of the Nevada County Green Party. Mr. Adams, I guess for me, it seems to me that, you know, Audie Bach ran as a Green, and she got elected as a Green, and then turns around and kind of goes, well, I'm not really that. I'm something else, but the people who supported me before should continue to support me. And I mean, I would think that really on some level it's got to be disappointing, because on the one hand, it was a really, I think, major victory for the Green Party and for quote-unquote third parties as a whole. And then to have her do what she did, I mean, in some respects, I would think for some people it would have to feel like a slap in the face. I mean, I'm assuming there are people who are representing that's how they interpret this, I would think.
Yeah, there are some. I don't know how many exactly. She did right after she made her by the way, she made a decision in about a single day. She learned the day before the deadline that it was even possible to avoid running in a primary by declaring herself an independent or declined a state. And she had to make the decision in a matter of hours. She didn't consult the Green Party, as far as I know, in making that, however. And she's rarely consulted the party about anything since she's been elected, as far as I can tell. But she does communicate with her local Green Party group, and I think she announced to them her decision right after it was made. Their reaction was sort of mild disappointment, I guess I would say.
Well, I understand that several staffers were fired as well, or resigned, quote-unquote, depending on who you talk to.
Right.
Are being
I'm not
replaced.
Sure if that's connected to this in some way or not, very directly. It could be a completely separate aspect. I certainly know from my own experience and our local Green Party experience that her office has not been very communicative and doesn't seem to have been very efficient, at least in terms of communicating with the rest of the Green Party or the outside world. Quite a number of us, for instance, had made offers of assistance once she was elected and were never even responded to.
Well, it kind of sounds like what I'm hearing you say is that almost right from the beginning, it's really been more about Audie Bach than it has been about Green Party.
Well, I can't even say that, to be honest. It tends to look that way at times. Other times it doesn't, but I'm pretty much outside the process here, so I'd hate to try to judge it from that without really knowing. But I'd say there were some problems in her office, let's put it that way, just in terms of organization and communication. And I don't know, she only hired, I think, one Green Party person, but I'm not even sure of that. But certainly there were a variety of types of people in her office, and it probably wasn't working well.
We've been speaking with David Adams of the Nevada County Green Party. Mr. Adams, would you like to give out any contact information for the Nevada County Greens?
Well, we do meet every month here, the second Monday of each month, and if someone wants information about that, they could call me at 432-8712, or they could just show up at the Nevada City Library at 7 o'clock on the second Monday. The next meeting would be November 8th.
David Adams of the Nevada County Green Party, thank you for being with us on the program today. This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We are joined from Camden, New Jersey, by Sherry Honkel of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and currently with the March for the Americas. Sherry, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Well, you know, it's day 19, and I've been walking for 19 days, so a little tired, but other than that, I'm okay.
Can you let the listeners know about the March of the Americas and why you're doing this, why it's so important?
We've been marching since October 1st, each and every day, about 20 miles a day, to call attention to the misery surrounding poverty, hunger, and homelessness in the United States of America and actually throughout all of the Americas in the world. So that's why we're marching, because poor and homeless families have been invisible in the U.S., and it's time that we become a visible issue in this country, and quite frankly, it's time for us to do something about ending it.
Can you let the listeners know the route that you've been taking? I know that according to the schedule, you're in Camden, New Jersey this afternoon.
We're on our way to Palmyra, and we're going to be going through New Jersey for the remainder of the next couple weeks, and then arriving in New York City at the United Nations on November 1st for a rally and proceedings.
We're talking with Sherry Hunkel of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and the March of the Americas. Sherry, can you let people know about the Kensington Welfare Rights Union?
Yes, the Kensington Welfare Rights Union is an organization made up of poor and homeless families. It originated in the Kensington area, which is the poorest district in the state of Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And from there, we've sprouted out across the country, working with 40 other poor people's organizations throughout the country, teaching them through our economic human rights schools and teaching them how to take back the basic necessities of life as they become politicized and become actively involved in reclaiming their economic human rights.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to ask, what kind of response have you been getting along the way?
We've been getting a very positive response. It's so overwhelming. From people honking to waving at us, giving us the peace signs, the thumb up, stopping by the roadside, donating a few dollars here and there, some food. The only way that we've been able to make it this far is through the contribution of people opening up their union halls and churches and letting us stay there, to providing showers, you name it. People have been incredibly supportive, and I think it's because they know that this issue is really their issue. And so everybody that we have encountered have embraced us. Children as well as adults have joined us right off the sidewalks. So it's been pretty amazing.
I understand, though, not all the people in positions of authority have been as welcoming. I understand that you were getting somewhat of a runaround regarding your ability to sleep in a park in one of the cities that you've gone through.
Yeah, in College Park, we were basically, the police decided to play with us for a while and had us march an additional couple miles after marching all day long, had us march at midnight with children while they played a game with us, saying that we didn't have permission to sleep one place, and then after walking 2 miles told us that we had permission to stay in the original place that we were in. And then we had another day in which we were arrested trying to cross a bridge. And but, you know, I mean, We've been able to deal with it because we've all hung together. We've stayed very focused on what this march is about, and that's what's kept us going each and every day.
We're talking with Sherry Hunkel of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union about the March of the Americas. Sherry, let me ask you a couple of questions because I think they're very important. You know, one is that, you know, we're constantly hearing about, you know, how wonderful the economy is, and lots of people are walking around just thinking everything is great. I mean, the realities are is that there are two economies in this country, one for those who have and one for the rest of us. I mean, things are pretty bad out there for a significant portion of our population, correct?
Absolutely. The majority of the people that we encounter are not the ones that are faring well from this so-called economic boom. Most people are working several temporary jobs, trying to figure out how to pay their mortgage, or they're behind in their rent, or they can't afford dental care. They're going without the appropriate health care that they need. You name it.
Sounds like things...
Sorry.
That's okay. It sounds like things
are
getting...
supportive. They honk.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing. I thought I had read somewhere that Danny Glover was planning to come out and march with you. Did that happen?
Yeah, Danny Glover came out and marched with us for one afternoon, and then he plans to come back on one or two occasions. And we also, not yesterday, but the day before yesterday, had... Jackson Brown and Steve Earle, who marched with us through the streets, as well as a variety of other musicians in this country, have been playing from the back of our flatbed and also taking turns walking with us throughout the streets of the communities and neighborhoods.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is because I notice out here with the organization Food Not Bombs, and obviously they exist in other places, but very often the authorities are not so much angry at them because they're providing food, but they're angry about them because they're educating poor people and politicizing poor people. Are you seeing that as being the case for some of the resistance that you receive? Because, I mean, on the one hand, you know,
absolutely.
Decent,
if we were just a group of poor people talking about how terrible our plight was, I think that would be fine. But the fact that we're determined to educate everybody throughout the Americas that this is wrong and poverty and hunger can be ended, and it's our responsibility to step up to the plate and play our historical role in trying to build this massive movement in order to end poverty, because we truly believe it's possible.
And
I think that's the thing that angers folks, is not just poor folks getting together, but poor folks that are becoming conscious of the fact that there's something wrong when people are homeless in this country when they don't need to be.
We're joined by Sherry Hankel, who is joining us from the March for the Americas. Sherry, the end of the march, when you get to New York, to the United Nations, is that going to end with some sort of petition or regarding the violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights?
Yes. The first week of October, Janet Reno was served with official papers. The Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, Sherry Hankala, and Joy Butts versus the United States of America. She was served with papers basically indicting the United States government for economic human rights violations. And at some point there will actually be a court proceeding, and we intend to keep listeners abreast of what develops as a result of that brief. And on November 1st, we're going to be met by the Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty for the World from the United Nations, in which we will give all of the documentation to her. And for the first time, some of the documentation that we've collected will be a part of the UN's World Report, highlighting that poverty does exist in the United States.
Well, certainly that's going to raise this to an international profile. And I know you've already spoke at the UN on one occasion, correct?
That's correct. And we're just going to keep going. And there's several beautiful, strong leaders that I have the privilege of marching with each and every day. And this thing is really blossoming. And we definitely have a movement afoot. And it's with radio programs like yours, we can continue to let people know that this movement is well and it's alive. And we just got to figure out a way to get the message out to other folks across the country so that they can figure out a way to have a relationship to this process. And in the meantime, people can pull up our web page and keep updated on what's happening on a daily basis on this march. Or if people want to send us emails, we'd appreciate that as well, because we read them at rest stops, and they really help lift people's spirits when they feel like they can't walk any longer.
How would people get in contact with the march, and in particular, if people out here were listening, wanted to be supportive in more than just goodwill, how would they go about doing that?
They could give us a call at our office, and they could give you a number of cell phones that contact us directly on the march. Our office number is 215-203-1945. Again, that's 215-203-1945. Or you can also bring us up on the web at www.libertynet.org/KWRU. That's www.libertynet.org/KWRU.
We've been speaking with Sherry Hankel of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union about the March for the Americas. Sherry, any final words for our audience? I know you must be very busy today.
That's fine. I just want listeners begin to get involved, and they can be creative in terms of figuring out what that is. If you want some help trying to figure out what that is, give our office a call, and we'll figure out how to hook you up to a building movement to end poverty, hunger, and homelessness in this country for all of us.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.